The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
We shall pay any price, bear any burden, meet any hardship, support any friend, oppose any foe to assure the survival and the success of liberty.
American prosperity is the bedrock of freedom and security all over the world.
An obligation to the heritage of liberty and dignity handed down to us by our forefathers.
It's time for the Pro-America Report with Ed Martin on The Answer San Diego.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Pro-America Report. This is Ryan Haidt here filling in today for Ed Martin. Glad to be with you. Thank you for letting me join you. This is a great day for America, a great day for our Constitution, and a happy Monday all around, and we will get into that in just 1 second. But before we do, let me go ahead and remind you right off the front here, go to ProAmericaReport.com. That's right, ProAmericaReport.com. That's where you're going to find access to all of Ed's writing. That is his Substack, and there you will be able to subscribe to what he is saying, what he's writing about long form, a lot of the topics that often and frequently, it coincides with what we talk about here on the Pro-America Report so very well, and it is worth your time. Also, go over to PhyllisSchlafly.com. PhyllisSchlafly.com is where you can find all of the archives of the Pro-America Report radio show. There you'll get the podcast, the standalone segments of all the different guests, our links and resources, anything from the show notes, as well as the all-important ability to sign up for the email list that gets you the daily wink, the What You Need to Know email every weekday morning straight to your inbox, 8 a.m. Eastern Time, all the other time zones concurrent. You will not be sorry that you do that. It is a nice little short email that gives you a lot of what you need to know, a boost for your day of information and news right off the bat without a lot of skin in the game. You don't have to take a lot of time or even understand a lot of the depth of the issues because we break it down for you. So don't miss that. Ed sends it every morning, weekday mornings. Go to PhyllisSchlafly.com to sign up for it. But we've got a great show ahead today. Ed actually was able to interview two wonderful guests. Looking forward to hearing from them, Nathaniel Palmer, James Hearson. We've got some great stuff coming up here. Of course, lawfare, a topic we talk about. James Hearson's going to dive into that with us in a different way, a different direction today. And then also, Nathaniel Palmer is actually the chief architect for some of the most complex digital initiatives across the country in government and private industry. We're going to talk about AI, and I think that's going to be a really fascinating discussion. I'm looking forward to hearing it. Hope that you are too, and you'll stick around for it. But before we get into the rest of all the show today, it's time for the wink right up front here, the beginning segment of our show, the What You Need to Know. And what you need to know today is, like I said, it is a great day for America. It's a great day for the Constitution. What you need to know is the Supreme Court has restored order before the 2024 elections. That is what has happened. I'll give you a brief recap. You've seen the news. Colorado and now Illinois and Maine and several other states were considering. These three states, primarily, though, leading off with Colorado, had banned Donald Trump, or attempted to ban Donald Trump from their ballots, saying that he was disqualified from appearing on the ballots on the basis of his being an insurrectionist, going to the 14th Amendment there and trying to give this legal argument, which had a lot of holes the whole time. I have to tell you, many people, a lot of folks on the left said that, oh, this was a strong argument. I remember David French, the so-called conservative, had a big opinion editorial back in January, you know, the strong legal case for disqualifying Trump. Well, it turns out, as many of us knew all along, and many people like Ed and a lot of the others in the Phyllis Schlafly world were saying, that's not such a strong case. In fact, it's a pretty weak case. It's a pretty terribly weak case, and it's going to get smacked down. Well, it got smacked down today the Supreme Court released a unanimous decision, 9-0, unanimous. I believe the official term is per curiam, which is essentially, this is a judgment. Here's your little legalese speak. Per curiam is a judgment of the court, by the court, meaning that not one judge signed it or issued the order. The order was issued by the entire court. So Justice Amy Coney Barrett gave a concurring judgment in which she gave some extra thoughts agreeing with the judgment. But here are my extra thoughts. And then the three leftist judges, Sotomayor, Kagan, and Jackson, gave a kind of concurring opinion. We concur with the judgment, but we don't like what everyone said. Here's our thoughts. But here's what you need to know. The reality is, as much as you could try to go into the concurring agreement from these three leftist judges, as much as the liberal media, or the, I shouldn't say liberal, the leftist media, the fake news media, and all of the left is going to try to pick this apart and show, well, here's what it really means. The unanimity. Is that the word? Unanimity? The unanimous nature of this decision, the unity in which the court agreed on the judgment, is absolutely stunning. Absolutely stunning. And here it is. In I'll pull it up here, and we'll link to it both on social media and in the show notes. You'll be able to get to it because it's not that long. It's worth reading. And, of course, Phyllis Schlafly Eagles, the day job Ed and I both work for, we put out a statement about this earlier that kind of breaks it all down. But, I mean, this is a huge victory for justice, federalism, free elections, for everything. Because what was going on with state officials and state courts, like the state Supreme Court of Colorado, trying to boot Trump from the ballot. This is a smack against the federalistic principles, this division of state and federalism that we have in America. It's really a very, again, flimsy argument. It kind of figured it was going to be struck down, and sure enough, here it is. But, I mean, that's essentially what it is, that because this is directly from the opinion this morning, Trump v. Anderson, the full name of the case, Donald J. Trump v. Norma Anderson et al. This is Trump v. Anderson, the decision this morning. Because the Constitution makes Congress, rather than the states, responsible for enforcing Section 3 against federal office holders and candidates, we reverse. And what they're saying is we reverse Colorado's removal of Trump from the ballot. That's exactly what has happened here. That's what's going on. This was a very, very sound and resounding constitutional smackdown of what Colorado had done, of this argument that the left has been making that Trump is obviously an insurrectionist, even though, of course, this doesn't pass the smell test on a basic level for me, and it shouldn't for you either. He hasn't been convicted of an insurrection charge, let alone even charged with an insurrection, anything related. He's been charged with some, you know, federal documents issues and civil issues, but nothing having to do with insurrection. So claiming and crowing that we have this, it was flimsy and faulty to begin with. But this is a huge win for order. The Supreme Court has restored order. I know a lot of very, very smart legal analysts and constitutional analysts are saying that same thing. This was chaos that the left is trying to impose by just willy-nilly removing candidates from the ballot. One of the most obvious attempts at interfering with and meddling in an election, removing people from the ballot. I mean, this is even stuff that the dictators that the left would like to try to, you know, conflate Trump with. These dictators, you know, Vladimir Putin and the like, they don't even just remove people from the ballot. I mean, this is heavy-handed stuff. This is pretty wild what they were trying to get away with, and it has been smacked down and resoundingly so, even by three very leftist Supreme Court justices who you and I don't agree with on very much. This is a big, big, big deal. And I think that this is very telling because this whole thing that we've been talking about, Section 5 of the 14th Amendment, that, you know, what is this? Congress shall have the power to enforce by appropriate legislation the provisions of this article. We're talking about a very interesting historical discussion that I think we've gotten into a little bit here on the Pro-America Report, but it really is pretty fascinating when you get into it. You're looking at this part of the 14th Amendment that was written to prevent Confederate generals from taking power and office holding at that time. It really is interesting to look back and see this historical precedent, anything that we've dealt with in America before about, you know, around rebellion and insurrection. And then what they're trying to equate it to, it really is incredible. And it just kind of brings it down to the fact that we're more politically divided than ever before in this country. And I mean, this is no more evident than in another place. Well, let me draw one more conclusion for you here. As we look across this political division, you know, so many places we're seeing this huge delivery of delegates in the GOP primary process for Trump. It just happened this weekend, too. There were caucuses in Idaho. Missouri had their caucus. Super Tuesday, obviously, is coming up this week, and there's going to be tons, 800 and something delegates of the 1,200 threshold needed for the Republican nominee to win. The process are going to be delivered tomorrow on Super Tuesday results. This is absolutely incredible when you see that Donald Trump is just steamrolling the Republican primary process. That's really incredible considering this guy is supposed to be like the most hated man in America or the most dangerous man in America. That is not seen that way by a wild majority of the Republican Party, of half of the country. I don't think that half of the country are fooled by some enamoring public figure. This is a resounding defeat of that narrative in my mind, and I think that you should take it that way as well. But as he is being delivered these resounding victories, the District of Columbia, which isn't a state, thank goodness, it's not supposed to be, the seat of federal power, it wasn't supposed to be a state equal with all the other states, but the District of Columbia had their caucuses this weekend, or their primary, and Nikki Haley won. This is the only thing that she has won, is the District of Columbia so far. The swamp is going to protect their own. The system will protect itself, although there she only managed to get a 60-something percent lead. So still, the swamp is going to protect itself. I think that this, you combine it with all of the absolutely tainted jury pool we've seen in the January 6th process and all of the rest, the legal professors, everyone crowing about this removal of Trump from the ballot and the disqualification. It all comes back to the elites are protecting themselves, and we must protect we the people from them. That's it. That's what you need to know. Today is a banner day for the Constitution. Thank you to the Supreme Court for restoring order before the 2024 elections. Come on back. We got a lot after the break. Don't forget, go to ProAmericaReport.com, PhyllisSchlafly.com, and we will see you back here on the Pro America Report in just a moment.
Welcome back. Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. A very, very interesting topic. We've been talking a little bit about it. I recorded my radio commentaries, which I record in the first week of March. They're running in April, so they're always a little bit evergreen. And I was one of the 3-minute commentaries that I recorded was on AI. And I think everybody's, if they're not struggling, they just are trying to figure out how to think about it. And our next guest is someone who has thought a lot about it and understands what's going on. His name is Nathaniel Palmer. He is a longtime pioneer. Automation, digital transformation, has worked on in both the private and the government sector on big initiatives. And he has a new book, which is out, called Giga Trends, 6 Forces That Are Changing the Future for Billions. It's from our friends at Post Hill Press. You can get it wherever you sell books. So first of all, welcome, Nathaniel. How are you, sir?
Thank you, Ed. Great.
So the piece that ran on Fox News that I tagged your co-author with another fellow, don't think of our AR future as humans versus machines. Instead, consider these possibilities. So my first question is, they don't really know what to make of robots. They don't know what to make of AI. So that seems like the first problem. I don't think people really have a, it's almost like a science fiction, and it's here.
Yeah. Yeah. it's evolving faster than we can even really keep pace with, mentally in terms of understanding it and less controlling it. And a lot of it, and the scary part of AI is the stuff that we can't see. And that is now manifesting. We're seeing great bad examples of that, the debacle that Google had with Gemini and its woke generation of things that were fictitious, but also exposing bias. But then the issue is, it's kind of obvious where you're coming from with that, but the observability of how they would reach conclusions like that, that's the scary part, where we have algorithms affecting our lives. So the part of the article of shining a more optimistic light on it, part of that it anticipates where things are going with having observable, or a term that I've used is ethical automation.
Right.
Rather than having algorithms making decisions that we have no visibility into, we have no means to appeal, instead being able to use AI to come up with things that allow computers to do what computers do well, but allow humans to be in control of decisions and actions, and to be able to put rules and guardrails in place so that it's doing what we tell it to do, as opposed to it's doing things that we really can't account for or even explain how it occurs.
Nathaniel Palmer, again, is our guest, author of a new book, which I will put a link up. It's called Gigatrends, Six Forces That Are Changing the Future for Billions. We're talking right now a little bit about AI and some of his essay that ran over at Fox News. I told my sons, I got children 19 years down to 12 years old, and four of them. And I was saying, it feels like a lot of AI right now is knowing you're going to have to know how to be a communicator to know how to talk to AI, meaning you're going to have to know how to say the right things and then check if it did what you wanted. So you can't escape and here's one that happened the other day. My son went and did on one of the AIs, he did a summary of a 100-page document, and it came back a 2-page summary, and it was darn useful, right? And it took whatever, 50 seconds, 30 seconds, 10 seconds, I don't know. And my point is, if you know what to ask, but what's the real story? Can it be alive? Can it be creative? Can it make decisions based on what? Based on massive checks of preferences, like what you'd like to hear? I mean, it's interesting. It's not alive, but it's got a lot of characteristics of live things.
It's mimicking.
Okay,
it's not alive today,
right.
and that's a huge distinction. But it's mimicking us. It's mimicking what we tell it to do. In the case of what we saw with Google's Gemini, it was mimicking what the bias was there. Now, a few years back, Microsoft had launched a chatbot that immediately went rogue and was saying some really nasty things.
Right.
And that's because it was being fed those things. So people were going online, and that's the role of statistical AI, where it's just drawing conclusions based on the data that it's being fed. So it's only as good as the data we give it. The generative AI, where the AI that's creating music and creating art, it's based on what we're feeding it. It's not yet coming up with things that we would not have conceived.
Right.
It can be very useful. On our website for the book, gigatrends.io, we have a series of a half dozen summaries of the book in different foreign languages.
Huh.
All of that. And it's in the voice of my co-author, Tom, but it's not, because it's synthetically generated using AI. The text of it, we fed effectively a ChatGPT version, a full PDF of the book, asked it to give us a 60-second summary of the book based on that. And it's pretty spot on. It's certainly, as the author being able to check it, it's accurate enough that I could say, well, there's nothing there that it said that is wrong. And then asking it to then create that in the voice of Tom, my co-author, first in English, listen to that. And that's,
right.
There's a little bit of nuance there. You could tell that it's not quite right. If you were having a conversation with that, you would be wondering who you're talking to, but it's still pretty darn close.
Right.
Then to be able to turn that into a German version, a Spanish version, mm-hmm. an Italian version, and so forth. That is something that is beyond the capability of Tom or I in terms of, right. of our linguistic capabilities. So in that way, the augmentation of the work that we do today and the promise that AI offers in that way is tremendous. It's not competing with us in that regard. There are certainly things that are done today by human beings that will be done by AI, and some of that is already happening. And in my own work, that's part of what I've done, is to be able to take work that was otherwise requiring human beings to do it, but where there really wasn't any value being added by it being a human doing that, to be able to have that be done by not AI in a complete black box, but a digital worker that is using AI, but is also following a set of rules and where every decision is applying a rule, and that's being captured and recorded. And that's one of the key differences, again, of this notion of observable AI or
ethical
automation. The notion of ethical AI is also being applied to, you know, where it's getting into and the type of information it's looking at. But even when we've put the parameters around the data that it can use, that notion of the ethical aspect of being able to demonstrate how this action was taken or why this decision was reached, rather than it being simply in the algorithm and part of statistics that are not visible or and not tangible to us.
We're talking again with Nathaniel Palmer and talking about his book. And I'm glad you mentioned that. Gigatrends.io. We'll put that up too, about his book just out a few weeks ago from our friends at Post Hill Press. One last question. We just got about a minute and a half left. Is it going to really, it's going to take away a lot of jobs? I mean, it's going to create jobs too, I assume, but is it going to take, are we going to see computer programming jobs change? Are you going to see, I don't know, lawyers, some lawyers' jobs? What do you need to draft? Why would I trust Joe Sixpack to draft a lawyer, a will, if I could use a very endowed AI? Right. I mean, are we going to see that kind of change?
We are, and we're starting to see that already. It's incumbent upon us to think through what we're putting in place and what we're willing to accept.
Right.
And, you know, having those limitations. But just as you're describing about with your son, that notion is what's now called prompt engineering.
Yeah.
That you can create computer software by asking the right questions and doing things in a natural language.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be big. Unfortunately, Nathaniel, sorry, I'm out of time, but I'm glad we connected and I'm glad I got your information. We'll get you back on. This is an important topic. Good luck with the book. Thank you for being out here and look forward to talking again.
Great. Thank you, Ed.
All right. Nathaniel Palmer, everybody. Again, I will make sure to put these links up, but the best one right now, I've now got a better look at it, gigatrends.io. You can see the book and lots of other aspects of it, testimonials and some infographics, too. So check that out, and we'll take a break. We'll be right back. It's Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Back in a moment. Welcome back. Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Our next guest, we were just again talking offline. Conversation is fascinating. His name is James Herson. He has a law degree, but also a degree in media psychology. He's a best-selling author, and you'll see his stuff over at Newsmax. I'm not sure for how long, but I've seen it for a long time. He's been a law professor at Trinity Law School and has just been a very interesting and important voice in what's going on. It's jamesherson.com, H-I-R-S-E-N. So welcome, sir. How are you?
Great to be with you, Ed. Doing well.
Thank you. Yeah, before we get into what we were getting ready to talk about, I want to digress for a second, because you're a law professor as well as a lawyer, member of the California Bar, Washington, D.C. Bar. In this case, it's particularly apropos because, you know, Dean Eastman is being attacked in the California Bar, his law license. And down in D.C., Jeff Clark is being attacked. And we're watching such irregular happenings in our legal system, you know, really irregular. If you're a lawyer, and I am too, also, I should have said that in case you didn't know. And so one question for you as an observer, participant, teacher of the law, why aren't more lawyers up in arms over this sort of weaponization it's not abuse of our legal system. It's the corruption of it, small C corruption. It's just not working right in DC and other places. And what surprises me is there's not more lawyers standing up saying, this isn't right. Even no matter what your politics are, you used to see lawyers be in agreement on sort of the quality of the endeavor. What am I missing that?
I think there are a lot of lawyers standing up, but, you know, your question was, is it abuse or is it corruption? It's both. It's both. And there's going to be, I mean, it's going to take a long time, but a lot of this stuff, the weaponization of institutions, the disregard of norms, the unthinkable use of the legal system in a political way for election interference, for political vendettas. These are going to create causes of action inevitably in the civil system. And there's going to be tons of those causes of action. The problem, of course, is, you know, when we talk about abusive process, malicious prosecution, generally you have to conclude the case before you bring those actions, but it'll happen eventually. One of the other things, I think, a phenomenon, you know, you asked the question about the lawyers. I think people are intimidated. I think people are feeling afraid of governmental institutions when they see the kind of surveillance, investigatory abuse, legal process abuse, all of this stuff. It affects them. And that was the intent. I mean, you mentioned John Eastman. John Eastman is a great man, a great professor, former dean, a lawyer. And what he proposed was perfectly reasonable and constitutional.
Right.
And the notion that somehow he should be deprived of his right to practice his profession is an outrage. It's outrageous. And it's amazing. You know, one would think that there would be more judges, particularly more lawyers, independent lawyers who would speak out. But there's quite a few courageous lawyers. I have to say, you know, I'm actively involved in appellate law. It's kind of a hobby. And especially at the Supreme Court level, I have like more than three dozen amicus briefs that I've filed on controversial cases. And I'm always heartened by how many public interest lawyers there are, how many public interest legal organizations that are out there fighting for fundamental rights. What's really shockingly missing is the ACLU.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. Yeah. The civil libertarians, they used to say, I don't care if you're conservative. I just don't want government overreaching. By the way, our guest is James Herson. Again, jamesherson.com. And but let me slide to this Christian nationalist thing, because you have a blog post up on your website, jamesherson.com. And highlighting one thing that you write about is that at one point, this MSNBC, on MSNBC, it's a Politico reporter, Heidi Prisbola, talks about indicate a belief in a notion that rights come from God is an indicator of Christian nationalism. Well, she got no less than Bishop Robert Barron, who's a pretty prolific communicator on the semi-conservative center right of the Catholic Church. And he took her to task and responded to that and said, among other things, this is opening the door to totalitarianism. In other words, her willingness, he says, to forget the principles that our rights come from God and not from the government is the basic problem. I think that's right. My question for you, James, two things is, one, Christian nationalism, that's like a slur, right? And it kind of works. It's nobody wants to be called that. But as you say at the end of your document, if it means you believe in God and you believe America, you know, something you love and you love all people, well, that's kind of what it is. I mean, is this like an Orwell thing where they're just taking language from us and therefore, you know, trying to cause people to be upset with each other?
Yes, it is. It is it's a psyop. It is an information war tactic right out of 1984. And you can see it very clearly when you talked about Presbola, the Politico senior investigative reporter who wrote a piece about this. But she essentially said, and the reason she brought out a whole bunch of people of faith, including Bishop Barron, is because she said, if you believe rights come from God, then you must be a Christian nationalist, which is insane, because that's a sine qua non essential part of what our republic was built on. You know, our formational document, the Declaration of Independence, it states it explicitly that we are endowed by our Creator with certain essential rights. They don't come from government. If you look at UN documents on human rights, they're voluminous. They say that rights emanate from the state, and the state can take them away. That's what the old Soviet Union said. That's what Cuba's constitution says. That's what all tyrannies embrace, That's why Karl Marx was against Christianity. And so this idea is right out of the founding fathers of communism. And that's why Bishop Barron said, and it was ominous, this is opening the door to totalitarianism, because this kind of thinking does that. Of course, it's a tactic. It came from multiple sources. Rob Reiner has this documentary out, and he pretty much equates the term Christian nationalist with white supremacy, racism. And that, to me, you can see it, what they're trying to do. It's the same thing that the regime did with the phrase MAGA Republicans.
Right. MAGA extremists. MAGA extremists. They added extremists to it. MAGA. Well, anyway, go. Sorry, keep going. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Yeah, well, she used the Prisbola said that this was an extremist element of conservative Christians. But Reiner, in his so-called film, it's really kind of a fake film, he attacked the Heritage Foundation. He painted with a broad brush. He attacked Charlie Kirk's Turning Point USA. He attacked Hillsdale College. They're a part of the extremist Christians. It's absolutely ludicrous, but it has a purpose. It's trying to create, as you said correctly, an Orwellian attack phrase, similar to, you know, the MAGA. I mean, I know they said MAGA extremists, but you hear the president say MAGA Republicans all the time, blaming them for everything right. that he's created. He blames them for it. So this is another example of a tactic. It's coming from multiple sources, and it has to be resisted. Yeah. Or you just say, explain what a Christian nationalist is. Someone who is a Christian who loves the country, and say, you know, this isn't a pejorative. This
right,
is
right. You got to try to reclaim. Right, try to take it back. Yeah, I get that. That's an option. It feels hard to do. James Herson, I'm sorry, I'm out of time. James Herson was our guest. His website is jamesherson.com. That's H-I-R-S-E-N. Very good website and a good guy to listen to. James Herson, and subheading Culture Law and Business Analysis. There's a lot of there. So check it out. And we'll take a break and be right back. Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Back in a moment.
This is the Phyllis Schlafly Report, a daily commentary continuing the conservative pro-family legacy of Phyllis Schlafly. Now, the president of Phyllis Schlafly Eagles, Ed Martin.
Back in January, a Boeing 737-9 MAX airplane made waves across the country and the world after a panel on the side of the plane fell off mid-flight. The seats adjacent to the unplanned emergency exit were thankfully empty, but this didn't stop phones and articles of clothing from being suddenly sucked out into the night sky. The Federal Aviation Administration ordered that Boeing ground all of the 737 planes like that one until inspections could be completed. Strict regulations surround airports and airplanes, as anyone who's ever flown knows. This is because if something goes wrong in the sky, it goes very wrong. It's therefore important that all factors that could lead to more negative outcomes for flights, whether it's a disappearing side panel or exploding engine, be reduced as much as possible. But what if some other factors that lead to negative outcomes can't be quickly fixed? This is increasingly the case due to the monstrous regime of diversity, equity, and inclusion, so-called DEI. As Boeing's own report, Global Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion, states, Boeing continues to make progress on our commitments as we advance representation and inclusion across our company. Boeing boasts that over 47% of its employees are from racial minorities. This might be a good thing, and it certainly wouldn't be bad if it weren't for the increasing push in hiring that ignores whether or not someone is qualified and instead only looks at which identity boxes they check. The manufacturer of the fuselage that lost a panel, Spirit AeroSystem, also boasts publicly about their commitment to inclusion. The DEI regime is leading to a competency crisis in America. Competency is pushed to the side just so companies can appease the woke mob, and this is already having life-threatening consequences. One author states that the competency crisis is the result of introducing unnecessary risks and hazards into complex organizational systems. Companies need to kick DEI into the trash can if our world is going to work.
This has been the Phyllis Schlafly Report from Phyllis Schlafly Eagles. Political correctness is no longer simply about restricting speech. This tool for tyranny has led to employees being fired, pastors silenced, small businesses closed, and truth suppressed. Thankfully, the politically correct can't censor the work at PhyllisSchlafly.com. Join us, won't you, at PhyllisSchlafly.com. And thanks for listening to the Phyllis Schlafly Report.
Hey, welcome back to the Pro America Report. This is Ryan Height here to wrap up the show. Again, filling in today for Ed Martin. Glad to be with you. Thank you for letting me be a part of this great show. We got a lot of stuff to talk about and a couple of good interviews there today. We've been on a string of them, man. There's been some great stuff going on here at the Pro America Report. I've been a very happy listener myself the last several days and looking forward to that keeping up. I hope that you are as well. As that reminder kicks in for me, I'll remind you to go to proamericareport.com. That is where you can follow Ed's writing on his Substack. And then, of course, PhyllisSchlafly.com is where you're going to get the Pro America Report podcast and all of the segment standalones for our great guests. You're going to get the show notes and the links and the resources and, of course, the all-important Wink What You Need to Know email. You can sign up for that there at PhyllisSchlafly.com. You don't want to miss it. But I want to break this down a little bit. We talked about it at the beginning, and I want to say something here. We've got Super Tuesday coming up tomorrow. By all accounts, Nikki Haley is going to be absolutely destroyed, annihilated, razed completely, R-A-Z-E-D. Go look it up. It's a good word. She will be absolutely annihilated tomorrow in the Super Tuesday. I think that she, in the highest polling in any of the one state, in any one state, is maybe she's cracked 40%, but I think for the most part she's around or under 40. Absolutely incredible. This is just there's a lot of interesting dynamics, and that's why I wanted to talk about this real quick, because there's no real one like what you need to know looking at this. It's a lot of little what you need to knows. There's tons of dynamics at play. It's very, very interesting. Again, I kind of mentioned at the beginning here, we're talking about the Supreme Court decision today that came down, handed a complete victory to the Trump campaign as far as him being on the ballot in Colorado and Illinois, Maine, and anywhere else. They just absolutely handed down a fantastic constitutionally ordered decision ahead of this primary season, because the left was meddling at an incredible rate. But here's something to notice politically, not so much with meddling in the election, but just looking at it. Donald Trump is being proposed by leftist media and the establishment and of both parties, the establishment Republicans, establishment Democrats. He's being held up as this incredibly divisive and unpopular figure. And yet what we're seeing is, for supposedly the most unpopular man in America, he is being handed this primary process as if he were the incumbent. Now, you could go into a conversation about 2020 and the legitimacy of that comment, but you know what I mean. Yeah, I'm not going to go there. We don't need to rehash that. We can talk about other things. But he really is. He's being given the incumbent treatment by each of these state primary processes. It's almost as Nikki Haley really only appeals to the tiniest little subsection of Republican voters, and it's really amazing. So as we note this, you know, Nikki Haley won her first primary contest finally this weekend. She won the extremely inconsequential District of Columbia primary, the swamp protecting its own, as I heard other folks say. That's absolutely correct. But I think what we look at here, this is essentially our picture of the modern conservative movement. you can see where the support lies. Because, you know, looking at the numbers that Trump is accumulating from even conservative places like Missouri, Idaho, but even up in some of the purpley areas like Michigan, the commanding support he's receiving, this is no small subsection. This is no slavering, you know, just cult of personality following for Donald Trump. There is a serious coalition of people who are backing this man to be president of the United States once again. And this is, we're talking about the religious right. We are talking about the pro-life right. We're talking about the pro-marriage right. We're talking about the pro-worker right, the pro-economic sanity right, the pro-America first policy right on foreign diplomacy. We're talking about the pro-American economy and energy first groups. These all are coming behind Donald Trump, giving him essentially a incumbent treatment in this primary process in 2024. And that is extremely telling to me. The only section of Republicanism right now that is supporting Nikki Haley are the elites, the establishment entities inside of politics and media. Politics and media, and fine, we'll throw in academia just for fun. Politics, media, and academia, these are the people who are supporting Nikki Haley. That to me is incredibly telling. Because that does not represent, I think we have clearly established that this group, these three groups, I should say, big media, big government, and big education, they do not represent the will of the American people. They do not even close to represent a majority of the American people's independent judgments on politics. And yet this is the only coalition that Nikki Haley can gather to give her any kind of support is the political class, the establishment, the bureaucracy. These are the people that love her. These are the only people that want her. The military-industrial complex, the permanent administrative state, it is incredibly telling. The Republican Party, the conservative movement, has made a very important, very drastic, and very good and necessary shift away from this era of conservatism that we have lived in, and we are moving on from it. I hope that Mitch McConnell's exit in the Senate is indicative of the same thing. I know he and his cronies are trying to pitch Mitch's end as a Senate leader as this the bookend of the Republican Reagan era. But just because he came in during the Reagan years doesn't mean that he had anything to do with Reaganism. Mitch McConnell absolutely represents much more the Bush era of Republicanism and an era that we ought to officially declare dead and gone and over. That Bush era of Republican politics ought to be behind us. The new era of America First is here. May it be so. May it be so. I believe that is the political trend that is clear to see in America, and it has nothing to do with anything that the media or the political elites and establishment are trying to pitch us. Don't leave them. Don't believe them. They're liars. Don't believe them. But that's it. That's all we've got today. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for being here on the Pro America Report. Thank you to Ed for leading the show. A couple of great interviews there. To Mason, my co-producer, for helping me keep everything on time. And thank you to you, our wonderful listeners, for making this show what it is. We appreciate you, and we cannot wait to see you again tomorrow on another edition of the Pro America Report.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.